Good afternoon, fellow mendicants of Dr. Freckles' Global Tontine Club. It's Saturday, October the 5th, 2019, approximately 16:30 hours for those of you in the Queensland Navy. It's like 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, October the 5th. And I don't know what to tell you, folks. I wish I could tell you that I'm pulling out of my dark funk. I'm not quite there yet. It's hard to call this depression, too, because I really don't feel depressed. And I have some days after hearing the banshees screaming in the night, and when I say banshees, I mean the mad people in the streets. You know, when I hear them screaming in the night, as I go to sleep, it's comforting. It means I'm not crazy. Okay? A lot of people go to bed at night after they watch the CNN or the Fox News or listen to the NPR, and they think, wow, everything's great. We got problems. But according to CNN, it's 100 years from now. We got problems. But according to Fox News, we can fix them with super tech. We got problems. But we don't know what they are. And out of sight, out of mind. And I'll sleep well tonight. I just took an Ambien. Maybe I took one too many. Yeah. But I have some sage advice. And as you well know, sage is an herb. Very useful. Witches use it to clean places. It's also really nice with turkey and a turkey dressing. I love the smell of sage in Thanksgiving time. So I have some sage advice. Every time you think your life is pointless, every time you think your life is absurd, every time you think your world is a ridiculous morph of a kind of scumbaggery of diptudes and limuli and nothing but vomit and poo and disease, I'm simply being honest, folks. Every time you think that your entire existence is nothing but a cesspool filled with poop, rancid whale poop, imagine your life as a French bulldog. Every time you feel sad or angry, every time you ask yourself, "Dear Lord in heaven, how did you create such a monster?" I say that, you know, oftentimes in the morning as I stare up at the sky, "Why did you create me, dear Lord? I'm nothing but a monster." Yeah. Every time you feel really sad, just imagine you had to live as a French bulldog. Just imagine you were the partially developed, too early aborted amorphous glumbus of a thing that can't even lick its own butt, can't even scratch itself with its forelegs, really, can't reproduce without the help of a turkey baster. I mean, every time you think to yourself, "I'm so pathetic, I'm a loser," imagine a French bulldog. And you'll feel better. It's like you say, is there a worse level? And for those of you out there who believe in reincarnation, imagine you had to come back as a French bulldog. That's really terrible. Anyways, here's something completely different.
Let's march on that path together. All of us, and we can make a difference, if we do. Now consider this headline for those who think big bank accounts will save them. Here's the headline. Could pricey urban meccas become crime-ridden ghost towns? Short answer, not could, will, soon.
Anyways, this is a little sampling of Dane Wigington, and if you've never listened to his weekly podcast, he has a YouTube channel. He has a website, Geoengineering Watch. I think it's geoengineeringwatch.com or .org, one or the other. And I probably shouldn't listen to the guy, but I'll tell you why I do. I think he's honest. I think he's a real agent, which means I don't think he's one of these fucking George Soros fuckheads. I think he seriously is concerned about his environment and his family and the lives of people he cares about. He seems sincere. Now, of course, I have interacted with people online before, like the Goat King, that seemed really sincere. And frankly, I've come to realize that, yeah, there are levels. There are layers. Just because somebody sounds sincere on the web, and this includes good old Uncle Dan. Even if somebody sounds sincere, it doesn't mean they're sincere. But he does seem very sincere. And I'll add this. Whatever is causing what I'm seeing some really wacky weather. And it's not just this year. It's not just recently. It's been getting worse and worse and worse. And when I say wacky, I mean when all of a sudden it feels like your skin is being burned off with a microwave oven, and then the temperature drops 20 degrees. This is weird shit. This is not normal shit. It's not normal to have the sun come out, and all of a sudden it feels like your stomach is cooking, like you're taking a fucking CT scan. That's not normal. That's probably UVC and X-ray breaking through. That's not good. And as far as these fucking crosshatch patterns go, listen, folks, the only way I know to create that kind of diagram in the sky is either through a physical wave pattern, and that means literally the ground underneath has to be kind of shaped like the waves you're seeing. Observe a river sometime. What you're seeing on the surface of a river is a model of what's underneath. So if you see some perfectly symmetric crosshatch pattern in the sky over uneven terrain or a fucking city, I'm gonna let you in a little secret. That's not because the ground underneath is shaped like a fucking soft flowing river. It's because it's electromagnetic. It's because there are metallic particles in the aerosols that are forming the droplets, which means that the water you see suspended in the air has at its core a lot of fucking metals. And yeah, if you run an electric field through particulate metals, you will see representations of a wave pattern. And if two or more of these sources interact, you'll see interference. And you'll see crosshatch. So, for example, if I had multiple ground radars projecting energy at a cloud system that contained metallic aerosols, you would probably see really strange symmetric patterns when the system's energized. Another thing, too, is that it would be repulsive and attractive, which means depending upon how these fields are used, you could literally push clouds around. Just like using a magnet to push metal shavings around. You could push clouds around. It's not science fiction. It's not magical super sorcery. It's basic fucking physics, actually. In fact, the hardest part about this is creating nanoscale particulate metallic matter. Believe it or not, that's not an easy thing to do. It's not easy to produce particles so that small, okay? It takes technology. It takes a high technology to take metals and produce them at the nanoscale so that they will simply aerosolize. Like, at such a small scale, they're so light that it doesn't take a lot of lift to keep them up. And then you add to it a few polymers, some plastics, and you're cooking with gas. Do I know for a fact that they're doing these things? No, I don't, but it looks like it. Do I know why they're doing it? According to Dane Wigington, as I've told you guys in the past, this is a well-tread topic on the Little Saigon Report, and if you get pissed off, I apologize, but every time you get angry with me for bringing up the fucking weather, just think about me watching Max Kaiser starting in 2013, and then every fucking week it was Crypto Kaiser. Every fucking day, actually. I used to love the Kaiser Report, and then all of a sudden, every fucking Kaiser Report was crypto this and crypto that. And, you know, there's more to the world than just crypto. With all due respect. So I think Dane Wigington is sincere. And I think that there is some funky stuff happening with respect to the weather. And I'll add this. You know, I've been pondering at various times another well-tread topic on the Little Saigon Report is the quote-unquote smart device. You know that little tablet or phone you hold in your hand and stare at all fucking day long? Or at least when you're not working? And when I say working, I've got my sarcastic quotes up in the air. You know that smart device? It does take your eyes off the skies, doesn't it? It just doesn't take your eyes off the streets. In fact, in some ways, it's easier for you to be pulled towards the streets, but you're still not looking at the streets. You're definitely not looking at the skies. You're not looking at what's above you. So in so many fucking ways, this little smart device is fucking brilliant. And when I say smart device, from the perspective of the Uner, oh my God, that's a new name for a human being. You're not a user, you're a Uner. From the perspective of the user, it really is ironically named. It's not making you smarter. But from the perspective of the people that want to control you, it really is a smart device. It's really quite brilliant. They've taken your eyes off the skies. They've taken your eyes off the world around you. They've replaced it with a simulated reality. And you can hold it in your palm of your hand. You can hold it in the palm of your hand. It's like the Matrix, but you pay a fee. So no, I do not know what's happening to the weather. I hope in my heart, and I do pray at times. I try to pray. I'll be honest about this too, man. The last month especially, but probably the last 45 to 60 days, I have had a hard time praying. And I can still do the prayers for other people. I can still pray at church when they say pray. But the heartfelt prayer that comes from the inside, the prayer that I think the Lord in heaven knows is true, I've had a hard time with that prayer in the last month and a half, 2 months. And it isn't just because things had gotten better for me. You know, if you listen to my podcast, and some of you complained the first couple weeks back in April when I started that contract, you complained, oh, you're not doing enough podcasts. Folks, it's really fucking simple. And Mike Judge, who also once made a living as an engineer, said this himself. It's quite hard to be creative in your job. Especially if it's an acidic job, especially if it's the kind of job where you're not just expected to be creative, but you're constantly exposed to nothing but absurd bullshit. It's as if you're living inside of a Hieronymus Bosch that is a giant diseased French bulldog. That is what working at Microsoft is for me. That's what it does to my fucking soul. Imagine a Hieronymus Bosch painting of a satanic devil dimension, but it's really the putrid insides of a giant French bulldog. So not depicting late middle age fascination and fear about hell, but rather just the insides of a diseased putrid French bulldog. That's what it's like for me to work at fucking Microsoft, and frankly, at most of these fucking companies in the King County area. And so, yeah. It's hard for me to be creative in that fucking French bulldog reality and then to have any positive energy, let alone negative energy, left at the end of the day. I got no energy. Neither. Despite all my bullshit of the last fucking month, I have produced more podcasts than I have in a long time. And according to some people, the quality's been good. Guess what? That's mainly because I haven't been going to fucking Microsoft. Sorry, I'm trying to keep things in perspective. And you know what? I will probably never make a living doing this for all sorts of reasons, not the least of which I think we got big problems ahead, and podcasting will be the least of our concerns. Monetizing your website will be the least of your fucking concerns. Whether or not you bought Bitcoin will be the least of your fucking concerns. And if you are an optimist and you need to listen to what I'm saying, because this is directed at the optimists who have any common sense at all. If you are an optimist, you should be going to the nearest coin shop, the nearest place where you can trade cash for physical gold and silver and buy as much of that as you can. Because that is literally the only optimist play I can think of right now. The only optimist reality I can imagine is something like what happened to the Soviet Union in the 1990s. So get yourself a lot of fucking physical gold and silver. That is your only happy, shiny, optimistic of onion-baked sandwiches. Onion-baked sandwiches, onion-baked sandwiches on sale at Rivkin's for $5.99. That is your only optimistic thing. Everything else is terribly shitty. One more little random factoid that's sort of related to the climate and Dane Wigington's statement about living in fancy cities, which I think is totally true. If you live in some fancy fucking mecca, urban mecca, oh my God, I once had a person tell me Seattle was a super city and therefore could never fail. Now, such things don't exist in nature. Okay, you know, I don't want to get into Carnot equilibrium. I don't want to talk about perpetual motion machines or the laws of thermodynamics. But if anybody ever tells you that they have something that will never, ever fail, they're a fucking liar. There are no super cities. There are no fucking whiskey candy mountains. There are no cigarette gardens. Okay? The real world is brutal as fuck. You know what I haven't noticed a lot of this year? I've seen a few, but not that many. Spiders. Now you say, Dan, I hate spiders. And listen, a lot of people hate spiders. But here's the thing you need to think about. Spiders take care of insects. That's pretty much their job in life. They're insects themselves, obviously, but they're predatorial. So they are predators on other insects, which implies what logically? Do they switch to soy? Do they start, you know, eating avocado toast? No, basically they die. They're gone. They get wiped out. Okay? You have to, when you think about predators, you have to think in terms of a pyramid, okay? One predator doesn't equal one prey. That's not how the fucking logic works. And if you don't fucking understand this, take a look at if you can find a spider web. I can't find one, but take a look at one sometime. In fact, hook up a camera, a game camera. You know those game cameras you can buy at the hunting store? The ones you can stick there that can film all day long? Hook up one to observe a spider web sometime. And then count how many insects that spider is killing to survive. That's reality, folks. If you're not seeing spiders, that also implies there's a lot of insects that are missing. And I haven't really been gardening this year, but if you've noticed that there aren't that many earthworms either, or not as many as there used to. You know, it used to be, if it rained, you would see earthworms everywhere. Of course, the rain doesn't really stay wet very long any longer, maybe because of the desiccants You know, the things that are drying out the air that we're told are not being put into the air by the planes above us because you should keep staring at your smart device. By all means, just stare at your smart device. Ignore the pillars of smoke in the distance, you fuck. Please, please, by all means, do not look at the skies. Avert your eyes. Please believe our lies. Yeah, I don't know, folks. Next topic. Human beings are collections of memories. I was thinking about this today because this topic of how human beings reason, how we think about the world, came up in a meme. It was one of these memes. And listen, folks, if you're one of these folks who has autodidactically found themselves in first order or predicate or propositional logic or modal logic and believe that logic solves all problems, listen up, Spock. Lewis Carroll was a famous logician, and he also wrote Alice in Wonderland. You have to understand that those things are fucking connected. Logic is great. I love logic, but logic is just a tool. It's just a system. In fact, even applying the word true in the context of logic doesn't really mean what you think it means, okay? It mostly has to do with the validity of statements. For example, if a statement is always false, you can pretty much say that it's probably related to faulty reasoning, which means that you'll only ever end up with a falsehood. Okay, that's a reasonable statement. If you reduce a set of logical functions and the answer is always false, then you know. Guess what? Nothing you substitute will ever create something true. That's kind of interesting, but it only tells you about the chain of reasoning. It doesn't tell you about the things you're reasoning about. This is something Bertrand Russell noticed 100 years ago. Okay? You can have really rational fucking arguments about things that don't exist. You know, like unicorns. How many horns does a unicorn have? Well, again, according to theory, there's one, right? But still, are there unicorns? So, anyways, a lot of people go off on these weird tangents about the purity of logic. That's fine. But let me tell you what I think is true. I think human beings are collections of memories, and some of these memories are powerful. Some of these memories are educational, which means, according to certain theoretical models, you can call them semantic memories. So you have episodic memories. These are memories of people, places, things, events, time, episodic episodes. And you have semantic memory. This is the memory that, well, relates to mathematics and how to play a musical instrument and how to drive your car. And frankly, a lot of learning is related to semantic memory, including language. Watch your language. I don't watch mine. I don't give a fuck. And humans love to connect things. Piaget noticed this, that there is a level, excuse me, a stage of learning for human beings called the transitive phase, according to Piaget. And if you don't know who Piaget was a French psychologist slash philosopher who lived in the 20th century, and he studied childhood development, childhood phases of learning. And one of those phases of learning or development is the transitive phase. And this is where human beings begin the process of what's called transitive reasoning. For example, if A implies B, and B implies C, then A implies C, right? That's transitive reasoning. It's really not that exciting, but when you think about it, most of what people do is like that. It's chains of reasoning. It's one particular thing you think is true that you believe implies something else. And often we're very, very confused about the implication. Like we're not quite sure why one thing causes the other, we just think that it does. And sometimes this reasoning is very powerful, very quick, gets us to the right answer fast. Sometimes this reasoning gets us to the wrong answer fast. For example, people that are afraid of guns. You know, people say, well, somebody went to a fucking building with a gun, used the gun, killed people. If we get rid of the guns, the people would still be alive. Okay, that's some fairly simple transitive reasoning. Okay, someone used a gun, the gun killed the people. You know, if you remove the gun, nobody dead. Now, of course, it's childish and it's stupid on a certain level, but that's how people reason. That's how they think in a lot of cases. If you think that somehow these people are particularly stupid, you don't really understand your own brain and how it works. One of the things people get obsessed about when it comes to reasoning about the world is this notion of a priori reasoning. That is, having assumptions and then rationalizing things based upon the assumptions. And what's implied in this is that you can reason without a priori. Well, actually, you can't. This entire debate is stupid. To even reason, you have to be aware. To even reason, you have to be conscious. To even reason, you have to fucking exist. You do. It's really not, I think, therefore I am. A lot of people believe that's a powerful statement of Descartes. It's actually kind of a, it's actually rhetorical. It's actually a trick of language. It doesn't really say very much. That's the truth. Cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. It really is more like what Sartre said. You exist, I am. You can say that you exist, and at some particular moment, you may be obsessed with thinking about math, and another moment, you may be obsessed with a pretty girl. But what is true in both those moments is that you exist. Your thinking is more of a fuzzy thing, not necessarily focused on any one thing at the time. A lot of people have tried to find an exit from this problem. The problem of axioms, the problem of foundational reasoning, the problem of faulty human reasoning, or what Richard Rorty would call folk psychology, this kind of notion of the human world that is mostly based upon shared opinion and shared platitudes and shared assumptions that many of which might be false. Now, where am I going with all this? Well, I really do want to go to the next topic, but this is where I'm going with all this, okay? It is important to use the tools of logic and mathematics to reason about the world because they're useful tools. Okay, they are. Probability theory, for example, is very useful in making good guesses, even what some would call predictions. Okay, there are lots of useful mathematical tools. Logical systems, whether it's Boolean logic, predicate logic, first order, modal, logical systems are very useful in computer science. Mathematics is extraordinarily useful in the field of cryptography. In fact, it's difficult to understand modern cryptography, modern encryption, without some understanding of modern mathematics. These are all true. But just because they're useful tools does not imply something else, something deeper. It doesn't imply anything, actually. And just because a mathematician is brilliant at connecting things together doesn't mean the mathematician is also not a slave to the inherent way in which we reason. We all reason this way, even the mathematician. You don't believe me? Go to a fucking university. I don't know if mathematicians still write their complex theories on a chalkboard. But imagine if one did. Imagine if a mathematician was writing out the proof for a theorem on the chalkboard, and it filled up the whole chalkboard. And it's one of these gigantic university chalkboards where you have to have a fucking ladder to draw on it. And then he goes away to lunch or to get a beer with a friend. Who the fuck knows what professors do? You go in. And you just don't erase symbols. You start moving them around. You start reordering where stuff is. And then you set up another game camera, because you know I love setting up these cameras to observe the natural habitat. And then you observe this professor and coming back. And I promise you, you will see anger, you will see frustration, you will even potentially see confusion, and then maybe even sadness. I don't care if you're Kurt Gödel, Albert Einstein, Rene Descartes, freaking Bertrand Russell, one of the greatest mathematical logicians that ever lived. I don't care who you are. There are limits to this kind of reasoning. And what's worse is we're slaves to the time series. We're slaves to the sequence. Our reasoning is, in a very foundational way, sequential and chained and transitive. Even the fucking math professor who wants to transcend all of these fucking connections will get pissed off as fuck if you reorganize his fucking symbols. Because they are meant to have meaning in a certain direction. So if you ever get into an argument and someone says, oh, that's just an a priori assumption, well, frankly, so is the principle of identity. The idea that A and not A is false. That is also an assumption. As Bertrand Russell tried to demonstrate and then failed in the Principia Mathematica, there is no way to prove that. You can't prove it. You have to believe it. There's no way to prove that 1 and 1 equals 2. It is so foundational, so critical. In fact, you could argue that all of mathematics, in a practical sense, comes from that simple, fucking, clever monkey observation that if you put two things together, you get something else that adds up to 2. That is not terribly complicated, but it is important, and guess what? There's no real way to prove it. Okay, you can't really prove it. These are not things you can prove. It is literally the definition of an axiom, that it cannot be proved. But we call it an axiom, because if we called it an assumption, if we called it a belief, then all of a sudden people get upset. Especially the Scientologists. And when I say Scientologist, I'm joking, because that's an actual cult. But there are a lot of these people who think science and math are the absolute path to truth. And maybe. I don't know. I don't think so. I think that math is a very clever place to play games, symbol games. And I think that that is the case with mathematics. And I think science is wonderful for trying to understand the physical world. But there's probably a lot more going on. A lot more that we don't see. Yes, human memory is faulty. This is true. Human reasoning is faulty. And I don't care who you are. You could be the most brilliant logician that ever lived. And I guarantee you, if I could observe you in your natural fucking habitat, I could find several logical flaws in every fucking thing you do every fucking day outside of the lecture hall. None of us is special that way. None of us is Data. None of us is Spock. And here's the thing, I'm not even sure Spock, and again, I'm talking about Star Trek Spock, right? Pure logic, because he's a Vulcan. Yeah, not even Spock is necessarily that fucking logical all the fucking time. Anyways, next topic. I beat that one to death. So, another topic that is come up a lot recently for reasons I think are important is this issue of nuclear power. Now, again, I don't want you to quote me on this. This is more just a question of numbers. According to an article I'm looking at, as of December of 2018, there were roughly 457 nuclear reactors operating worldwide. Some places don't have any. Like Bangladesh, according to what I'm looking at, Bangladesh, the country, the nation of Bangladesh, has no operating nuclear reactors. And given that, you know, given that it's kind of an island, excuse me, not an island, it's a nation that's essentially very close to sea level, it might not be a very good place for one. Belarus, you know, which is right next to Russia, has none, according to this. I can't believe it. Brazil has 2. And I hope they're not boiling water, but they probably are. Canada has 19. China has 46. France, the nation of France, has 58 operating nuclear reactors. I would not want to be living in France on day zero. And you can tell me, Dan, they operate the safe ones. Well, maybe there are safe ones. Maybe they do operate the light water or the salt pebble or one of the fucking thorium Gs. I don't fucking know, honestly, folks. What I do know is most of the reactors in the US are the dangerous kind. The United States has the most reactors. We have 100. And most of those, if you want to know, are east of the Mississippi, like more than 80% of them. Okay, so if you live east of the Mississippi, you live within a day's drive, probably, a day's drive of one of these reactors. You know, you're probably within 200 or 300 miles of one of these reactors. And you say, well, Dan, why would you say a day's drive? Why would you say 200 or 300 miles? Because, folks, when a reactor cooks off and the media loses control of the narrative, and you start seeing pirated videos of people with their faces melting off, if you start seeing nuclear workers that have massive fucking boils on their faces, it looks like they've had the worst sunburn you could ever imagine. When you see basically the reality that they can't hide, people will panic. Okay, I hate to break it to you. People will be panicked as fuck. And if it's the wrong reactor in the wrong place at the wrong time, you're gonna have the worst traffic jam you could ever imagine in the history of traffic jams. And you'll never clear it. You try getting backup emergency water pumps to that fucking reactor. So maybe the Navy, you know, swoops in and somehow saves our day. That's what I think you'd have to do. If it was Indian Point, the Navy would have to fucking bring in a backup system, backup pumps immediately. This would be a national emergency. But I don't really know that we are capable of responding to things in ways that are appropriate. Like, you know, people make fun. They watch this miniseries, Chernobyl, about the Ukrainians and the Russians and how they managed that reactor accident in the Ukraine back in 1986. And they like to make fun of stupid Russians and stupid Ukrainians. Well, listen, folks, there are a lot of stupid Americans. I know you don't believe it, or actually, you have a lot of dissonance. It's funny. Some of you fucks will spend all day making fun of millennials. But the problem is, a lot of these people are millennials who are doing these jobs now because that's how old millennials are. Ex-Gen's 50, folks. Millennials are doing a lot of the hard work. And if you can tell me, no, mostly in the nuclear industry, everyone's 60. Oh, so you think that's good then? That almost everybody in the nuclear industry, from a statistical perspective, is over the age of 50. You need to meditate on that shit, buddy, because nobody lives forever. So here's the deal, folks. A lot of you have a lot of confused ideas in your heads at the same time. Remove all that. You need to know this. The only escape hatch from the horror of the nuclear Armageddon that will come once shit starts breaking down, the only escape hatch is to believe that nuclear power is a myth, is a conspiracy. It's totally made up to believe that nuclear bombs are made up. Believe it or not, and I brought this up before, there are people that believe this. They believe that there's no such thing as nuclear power. There's no such thing as splitting the atom. There's no such thing as fission. There's no such thing as fusion. It's all a big fucking, you know, grift, big con, total bullshit. I honestly don't think that's true. I really think that must be false. You know, I am certain radiation is real because I've experienced a little of it in my life. So, yeah, radiation's real, and the sun is a big fusion reactor, probably. But the bottom line is this: if you think that if you want an escape hatch from what's going to happen, the only one I can think of right now, barring a radical, miraculous shift in technology and science, way beyond anything we can imagine. The only escape hatch you have is to believe that nuclear reactors don't exist, that's all just a big scam. That's the truth, dude. And the other thing is this, once they start cooking off, as I've said in the past, the system doesn't become stronger, it becomes weaker. So the ability for the system to maintain order decreases. It is a terrible, terrible feedback process. It is terribly degrading. It's worse than just one traffic jam. It's worse than one logistics bottleneck. It will be traffic jams and logistic bottlenecks and fucking panics everywhere. The only thing that could potentially save us would be something like a radical discovery in physics, something like negative energy. If someone could design essentially the equivalent of a laser for negative energy, then in theory, if negative energy exists, and it's another theoretical thing, in theory, you could use negative energy as a way to deal with radiation. In theory, you could use negative energy as a way to essentially make radionucleotides inert. You could force transition. So let's say plutonium has a half-life of 250,000 years. If you had a projection system of negative energy, you could force plutonium through that half-life faster. In theory, making it inert in like, what, 20 minutes? Who knows? I mean, again, this is a hypothetical. It is the only thing I can think of that could possibly save our asses if things get too bad. But if you're depending upon the reliability of your fellow human being, the same human being that you can observe every Black Friday, fighting each other, tearing at each other, pushing old ladies over so they can get a Furby, if you're depending upon those people as your wall of protection so that this doesn't happen, I think you're, yeah, you're confused. You're confused. There is no ethos there. There is no, I will stand at the wall. And if you live in France, oh my God, if you live in France, and I don't know if, what percentage of the French reactors are boiling water, but if you live in France and they have boiling water reactors, I would not want to be there. I wouldn't want to be in Western Europe. Because once it starts happening, once this chaos starts, it doesn't stop. Anyways, next topic. I think I've scared you guys enough. I just really think if you want to know, and here's actually one more thing. I get this feedback from people like, Dan, why do you talk about Dane Wigington and geoengineering and solar radiation management and climate change? Well, let me be honest with you guys about this, right? Let's talk about this for a bit. For many, many years, I believe some things I now believe are false, and I'll tell you why I believe them. Because I could not believe what Dane Wigington believes. I could not believe that our government would manipulate the weather to confuse us. And frankly, maybe even more than just confuse us, to manage events. Because, like I said, folks, whatever the reactor design is in France, I know that most of ours are boiling water reactors, and they need an ambient differential between the temperature of the reactor and the temperature of the water, which, another way of putting it, if you're going to have a boiling water reactor, you've got to have a source of cold water. Cold water. Okay? If you have an ice age, water collects in ice. That means you have droughts. It means rivers actually run dry. Believe it or not, a lot of rivers run dry. A lot of rivers lose their flow rate. Oh, yeah. So if your reactor is using a river as its heat exchange, guess what? You got problems. If it's using a lake that is lowering because, again, ice ages create droughts, you've got a problem. If it's near the ocean, guess what ice ages also do? They lower the ocean. You ever hear the land bridge between Siberia and Canada? You know why that existed? Well, one of the reasons was the oceans were lower. The depth was lower. In an ice age, water collects on land. That's the meaning of ice age. So your ice age isn't going to save you, but it will increase the amount of chaos. And chaos will definitely not save you. And we will salt the earth. If you're wondering if 457 meltdowns or disasters, or even half that number, would salt the earth, it would salt the earth for a very long time. That would be bad. If it's pole shift, it's actually as bad or worse, because again, you've got chaos. Chaos doesn't work well. If it's Planet X, if it's a fucking caldera, it does not matter. whatever the source of chaos is, if there's not an effective means of shutting down these reactors, then yeah, they're all going to cook off. It's virtually guaranteed. It is guaranteed in the design of a boiling water reactor that it will have a meltdown if you do not keep the control rods from melting, period. Next topic. You know what? What time is it? I've been talking for 45 minutes. Fuck. I don't know. The next topic, maybe the final topic I'm thinking about right now, the one I'm going to talk about, is a video that was sent to me from a friend that lives in St. Louis. The video is of this dude going around picking up girls with French bulldogs. And it was one of those things that made me think, because I don't know. The basic implication was, is that if you have a French bulldog and you go around picking up on girls, that the French bulldog somehow will help you. And that might be true. Because when you look at a French bulldog, If you care, if you have a mammalian soul, when you look at a French bulldog, other than dread, you feel a very deep sadness. You feel a great sadness. And the thing is, a lot of women, because of that maternal instinct that sounds really misogynistic, and that's a fancy word for not liking women, right? No, I don't know if the maternal instinct is misogynistic now. I don't know why people would be ashamed of actually having an instinct to give a shit. But yeah, the maternal instinct probably triggers, I mean, look at the French bulldog, look at that poor, poor little glumbus. Look at that collection of Jimuli. Look at that mere speckly. That speckly of existential treadwear. That poor little schlimp. Oh, what a little compass. Why don't we build a trebuchet and launch you into Happy Land? Uncle Dan already thought about that. Yeah, so there's, and so I watched this video, and I don't know. I mean, part of me almost feels like I want to make you guys listen to it, but why would I do that? What's the point? Why would I do that? But I can put on a helmet labeled Imagination Land, and I can imagine going out into the streets of Seattle tonight, going up to Broadway with my sister's French bulldog on a leash. Beans and I go up to the Yesler and Broadway pickup site for the tram. And when I say tram, you know I mean streetcar, the streetcar named Desire. The one that heads up Broadway. The one that heads up your ass. Beans and I hop on board. The driver, the pilot, the captain of the tram gives us a dirty look. I returned the look with something even dirtier. And then Beans and I take a seat as we sit there and watch the city go by. Beans looks out into the darkness that's coming into the evening's time. He looks out into the evening of Broadway in Seattle, and you can see his own sense of disgust. He looks at the humans. The same bastards that bred his completely impossible and absurd and painful life. And then Beans and I get off at Union. We get off at Union and we go up to Carlos's, Carlos with an apostrophe is a bar. It's on Broadway, not far from Union. It's got an ethnic feel. It's Mexo Thai food fusion, Mexitai, or Thai Mex. We go in and we sit down, Beans and I. And there's this beautiful woman sitting next to us. I check her hands for rings. There are no wedding rings. I don't notice a boyfriend. I say, "Dear Madame, my French bulldog is not feeling very well. He misses his mother. Dear lady, will you let my French bulldog suckle at your bosom? Will you let him sip upon your nipple? Will you let him get some of your woman oils and woman milk into his body so he can feel okay? And then will you let me film this so I can post this to YouTube?" Oops, I meant Pornhub. After about 30 seconds, I was asked to leave Carlos. "Get out of here, buddy. Get out of here with your damn son of a bitch dog." Beans looks up to me and says, "Where are we going now?" with his own little glumby eyes, his own little dark dead eyes, his dead eyes of pain. And I say to Beans, as if only through a mind connection of the soul, one mind tube connected to another, "Beans, we're heading up to Nigel's. It's a gay bar, but lots of straight women like to go there. The green sweater women. You know the women that wear green and black year long? They're like perpetual emo chicks. They've all had 17 abortions. Get them to talk about their abortions, Dan." And then you'll have a great conversation. That's what Beans was telling me. We should go to Nigel's and hang out with the green and black, you know, leisure wear women of the quasi-Marxist transcendental hatred clan. And if you can get them starting about their 17 abortions, they won't stop. And if you tell them that you support, you know, the National Organization of Women and NARAL and whatever kind of social justice warrior glumbic club that takes dead babies and turns them into products for a fucking cosmetic company and PepsiCo and whoever else needs some fucking stem cells. We went in there, we talked to those green sweater women. I said, "My sisters, I recently transitioned. I used to be an ugly woman. Now I'm a kind of an ugly man. I still have boobs, but I'm looking for some action. If you actually care about, you know, all this fucking social justice warrior bullshit, you should take off your clothes and just make love to me. Because I have a French bulldog. So I was asked to leave Nigel's, and it wasn't pretty. Some very muscular gay men, but technically twinks, in tiny little outfits that totally showed off their genitals. They grabbed me by the arms, they grabbed beans, they tossed us into the streets, and when I was coming to from my concussion from being, you know, fucking street kicked by a bunch of fucking, I don't know, man, gay men. Beans was licking my face. I really don't know if a French bulldog's gonna help you. If you're gonna go out tonight and you wanna find love, I don't know that a French bulldog will help you. If you're looking for marriage and kids and commitment, I'm seriously, seriously doubting that having a French bulldog will help you. If you don't give a shit about your fellow human being and scoring or having sex or hooking up is really just a game, then maybe the French bulldog will help you. But you need to know this. Don't even double think this. Don't triple think it. French Bulldog's got its own agenda. It has its own purpose. It doesn't want you to succeed. All it wants is for you to share its pain. If it whispers things to you in the darkness of night, it's not whispering truths that are helpful. It's whispering ways to go down paths, to head down trails of destruction. That is what a French Bulldog does. But you can also remember this. In all of this darkness that is the world sometimes, and all the pain, and all the issues you might have with your stool, I mean your poo, I mean the stuff that comes out of your butt that sometimes looks a color it shouldn't look, you can imagine the French Bulldog. Imagine its pathetic 8 to 10 years. Imagine its horrible existence. Imagine the hatred it feels every day at a human race for bringing it into existence, an accursed existence. So, yeah, if you want to feel better tonight, this Saturday night, get yourself a French Bulldog.